Reminiscences of Furnace Iron Mines, interview with Sam Pollitt, 31 Union Street, Dalton in Furness, Cumbria, by James Walton, on the 14th of the 3rd, 1988. Cumbria Community Trust, Mining History Society, archive number is A26.
You right?
Yep.
The year of 1934, I was 17 on the 30th of January, which I became out of work. I approached...
Could I just interrupt?
Go ahead.
When were you born in Dalton?
Yes. Oh.
Yeah. Where were you born then?
Queen Street.
Queen Street. It's just as well to know it.
Oh, I see. You want to keep interrupting, right?
Oh, yes, we'll chat if you like.
And,
ask questions.
I happen to be going onto the square, Dalton Tudor Square. And there was a gentleman, well, I won't say that, he was a gentleman, that wanted to have any person to interview him because he was looking out for men for the pitch, like lads and everything like that. Well, of course, I approached him and he said yes. And, what was your name? I told him. But I said, I don't think I could start work not until I informed my mother. Now, my mother didn't want me to go to pitch.
No.
But after a while, she gave in. I said, well, I said, I'm not picking no money up. I'm out of work. I mean, say, serving your time at that particular time was only 5 shillings a week for serving your time.
Was it?
Both joinery or any trade there was. You were lucky if you got any more than that. I'd put in for jobs like when he came up into the cooperative, like to go into the, like a plumber's labourer and things like that. Now all these kind of jobs was always wrapped up because somebody else knew about them.
Yeah.
But
that was a job which everybody was after, really, wasn't it? Working for the court.
Yes.
It was regarded as a good...
Well, it was a good job, like same as such as flower. You started off like same as a flowers lad, flower lad, which was in the grocers, or as I said, a plumber's labourer. Starting off like being a plumber's labourer. And of course, like if you wanted to get into the confectioner's department, well, that's how you had to start and work yourself up. Until, of course, well, it took years, like, to get to the top. It wasn't very much money. It was only getting, I meant to try to ask this bloke about the job, but anyway, he would have told me what he got, a fella called Preston, when he first started. But I knew all this. Well, going back onto this job that I could only just get, I took it. Of course, my mother was very mad about me taking it. But I had no money, no pocket money. So, of course, I went to work. We had to take a different, like a changing of clothes. And, of course, when we landed there on the Monday morning, he showed me around the place after I got changed.
This was at Newton, was it?
This was at Newton.
Yes.
They showed me around.
You walked it from Dalton, I presume?
You walked it every day. I had no transport or bike.
So what time did you leave home?
Well, I left home, we'll say, like, same as 7 o'clock.
Oh, I see. So what time are you actually starting work at?
Well, I was starting work at 8 o'clock.
Wow.
So it gave me time to get changed.
Mm.
And, like, I'm from the pit, like, on the pit surface.
Yes.
And, of course, it's Mr. Bonnick. It was him that got me the job. So he told me what I had to do and this and that. And the first job what we had was we were filling what they call the grain or the iron ore, the thicker iron ore, which was picked from the grids at the top. I took them out of on the grid from the bogey. And we had to pick this up, just like pick them up into another bogey. The muck went to the tip end, and the grains were tipped down. Now these grains, the ore, was like same as in lumps, and of course that was put in these skips, and these on this roadway, endless rope, it was about a mile in length from Newton to Stenton. On this flight, there was 22 skips, 9 one side and 10 the other. 9 was on the going out and 10 was on the return. So there was always 3 skips in to be filled. Well, they were equalised out by such as a bell to time them every 4 minutes or something like that till it got over the standard, and then you set the other one.
So then, this was taken off from the
mines to the railway station
to be loaded
to be tipped into the wagons.
Ah, I see.
On the opposite side of the railway station, like on Stenton side.
Yeah.
Now the amount of men on that job was 6. There was 3 at the Newton end, and there was 3 at the Stenton end. 1 was the weighman. And of course, these skips held about, say, 5. Well, you only had to put 500 weight on them, or approximately 500 weight, but it had to be level on account of like tippling over,
yeah,
things like that. Well, it's night. The person from the opposite side, from Stenton's side, used to be given an oil can which had to oil all the wheels coming from East Bath back to Stenton to keep them in. Now, that's your first day on the Monday, plus emptying all the oil from the upper. The second day I was there, they were given all kinds of different jobs. The 6 lads was given different jobs, such as the blacksmith may need a striker. The fitter might want somebody to do a bit of turning, like such as like, what do they call them, dies, for putting the round the pipe, the threads round the pipe. The joiner's shop, the others would go cutting the timber for the miners. And they used to be cutting them, the butt ends was cut at 3 foot. They were used to make like sleepers for down the pit, 2 inch like, 2 foot 6 or 3 foot. The other ones was cut off at 6-7 foot. And the head trees was cut off at 8 foot. So as when the 2 joiners, or the joiner and his mate, would make the 7 foots into what they call collars, or forks. Well, they used to cut them forks by cutting a slice off the head of the tree and then trimming it with an axe to make a fork. So as when they put these up for the pitmen, so as they could use them, I'm coming like to tell you after when I get down the PC.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first job. When I was coming towards the 18th birthday, the first wage I got for that fortnight, which had to work a week in Hanley, I got 12 and threepence. I got 13 and ninepence, that was to be an upper ladder. I got 16 and ninepence eightpenny as I come near up to 18. Then as I did reach 18, I got 16 and ninepence eightpenny because my stamps had gone up, so they told me. So then I was what they call a grid ladder. So I worked on the grids at the top of this hopper. So I had to knock all the metal through these, like, what it was called a grid, but it was railings. You see, you knock this all through. Mm-hmm. Well, the biggest saw, you put into a bogey, and you take from the outside. That was to go elsewhere. And of course, I came to the, turned 18, I got 18 shilling. Then I got to come to the, a top hand. But it was like the second top hand. And of course you can call him a leading hand, he was the man who had to look after everything. He even had to let the pitman down. Well, I worked on there for almost like 2 years. When I became the top hand, which I got, had to do the singling for down the pit. Now this singling, which was had to be run through to the engine house, so as the winder would know what we were doing. Now, first thing of the morning, the boss, the pit boss, and his assistant used to have to look the shaft over. So they used to put an extra, like a staging on top of the cage, so as they could stand on it.
Oh, yes.
Because they could see both sides of the slide rods as it was going down. Well, they had what they call, like, same as a, well, just ordinary hammer, like a Vicky's hammer, to tap all the way down to see if any loose joints or the coach bolts, whether they was coming loose or things like that. Now, to send that cage down, this used to set off at the pit level or ground level.
Yes.
You used to have to ring 4 distinct bells and then 3 distinct bells. Slow. So as that cage was let down, they knew where it was going, they knew who was riding on it. Now the return, they couldn't touch the bell properly, so there was another bell for them to ring up, come out of the pit when they got finished getting to the bottom. And of course, if the bell was rung once, you had to ring that single right to the engine house to stop that cage on the one. Now you would get 4 little distinct knocks when they wanted to move. They'd either ring 4 and 3, that was to come up. But mostly it was 2 knocks to finish off to the bottom of the pit. Once they got to the bottom of the pit, the pumpman used to ring them back again. But it gave 4 distinct knocks on the bell up to the top ride. I would answer that back to him, 4 back. Then he would give the other 3 bells, which meant that cage had to come up. I distinctly rung the same number of bells over to the engine house, 4 and 3. So he'd have to come up. You see, it was a different rate of speed with men riding on top of the cage than riding in the cage. Now, when they had got out and they finished at the top, the landing, the miners would get the ready, the wood, for which they had to take down the pit. Now, these bells had to alter. that the miners would go down first, and the three of us would put their timber on the cage, and they'd have a number, whether it may be on top of the cage, no, not on top, inside the cage, it had two opening legs, so as you could put your wood underneath. You used to have to lash it, so as it wouldn't drop out. Now, to descend that bogey, or that wood down the pit, you would ring 5, 2, and 1. Even though that was good, the engine, the winder, would know that the wood that you were sending down was sending us down to the top height. If it had to go to the bottom, it'd be just 5 and 2. Now, when it was coming out as you were sending the tools down, such as the picks, the saws, the augers, the drills. Sometimes they might take a loose pipe down from the wind to drive the drills, you know, through, which was done by compressor. And of course, it used to be a bigger bogey than usual, so they wouldn't slip out and they had to be tied round. They used to, take their augers or something like that while they were going down. But of course, if the lad or the bell ringer saw it, he could stop him and say, no, I've got to put that in a bogey. Because it's not safe.
No.
He could drop it. It could land on somebody's head at bottom. Well, naturally it wouldn't really, but it would land probably in an awkward place. It might throw the cage out of position if it got stuck.
Yeah.
If it was dropping, it dropped down as well, even dropping a stone, it doubles its weight every so many feet, doesn't it?
Mm.
Like dropping anything down. So anyway, at the bottom of the pit, when everything's all right, the miners are down, they correspond by getting so many bogies apiece. On the top, you were given, each company was given 20 pegs. There were 19 pegs, plus one, what they call the king peg. Now these pegs was one at a time that came on a full bogey to the top.
Yeah.
In each bogey was consisted of between 700 to 800 weight in a bogey. But different companies, as I'm mentioning, number two company was waiting at the bottom of the pit. Now they bogeyed the 2 to 3 people in the company. There'd be the miner, his assistant, we'll put it that way, and of course there'd be the trucker, or the bogeyer. And he had to bogey, say, 26 bogeys per shift. That was for 5 shifts. On the Saturday morning, he may have to bogey 20 bogeys. In number three company, which I was in, I had to bogey 28 bogeys per shift. Now, 28 bogeys was a day's running. That would be 7 ton I'd bogeyed in one day. Now, the distance I used to have to go would be approximately, well, as you could see by that map, it would be about 0.5 mile, or we'll say 1/4 mile. So that was like same as 0.5 mile there, 0.5 mile back to my upper. Yeah. Number 10s, they had to bogey, because there was more men up the rise, there was added to bogey 48, which there were two bogeys. 2 days of the week, Thursday and Friday, there used to be a man shoved in to push the other 24 bogeys, which was 48 bogey. On a Saturday morning, there'd probably be about, say, 16 to 18 bogeys had come out of there. So, roughly speaking, they were getting somewhere about 70 ton a week.
So, did you just push these?
Push those. They were pushed.
Must have been downhill all the way.
It wasn't exactly downhill. It was just as the same as the water. To explain it, just a small fall.
Yeah.
In some places it did rise a bit quicker than others, but it mostly it was on the practically level. It was just like same as a water course.
Mm.
Now then, in the, as I mentioned before, there was 3 engine drivers, there was 3 pumpmen, and they worked shifts. 6 to 2 or 2 to 10 and 10 to 6.
So they had a night shift going as well?
Well, they had a night shift going between them because there was 3 men, you see, on each shift. If they wanted holidays or they wanted a day off or out by that, they used to work it for themselves by doing a 12-hour shift.
Mm.
But that was up to them. And another thing, they had to go and report it to same such as the management, like Mr. Cornwall, or send word up, they don't always see him, they never always saw him and anything like that. You got paid out on a Friday, which was one man who would take the 3 men's wages, or go for the 3 men's wages. It used to be entered into a tin box.
Yes.
And the payout used to give it, and the man, same as myself, we're working at number 3s, I used to divide that money up between the 3 men. There was no difference, if nobody got more than anybody else. If there was coppers over, the person that went for it kept them. Didn't bother with anything else like that. Now, same as rock driving, you used to get paid so much a fathom. And the blasting, most of the blasting was done at the end of the shift. So as the smoke and the thing could get away. Now, mostly on a Monday morning, when they came out of the pit, they would go to the foreman's office and they'd carry a little square box. It was about 9 inches square. That box was to keep the dynamite in and the fuse and the caps. But mostly the caps and the dynamite. Now he was issued out, say, £2 of dynamite. Jelly dynamite. He would give you a ticket, the foreman, then you passed it on to the, well, it was a dialer. He used to dial in the bit, but of course it was a clerk as well. And anything you wanted, same as picks and all that, had to go to this foreman before it went through to the other person. Now then, getting your dynamite and your fuse, your dynamite came later, which had to walk from there to what I showed you on there, which was about, say, 1/4 mile.
Mm.
Now, nobody was allowed in there, only this dialer, or you put him as a manager. And he had to wear 2 pairs of shoes. So I should think if there was no striking, there was no smoking or anything. There was a Mr. Bell from Islip, used to fetch this dynamite every so often, and he used to have to be carried from the blacksmith shop to the dynamite house. and it was in boxes about 3 foot by 9 by 9. Roughly speaking, you know, 3 foot by 9 by 9.
9 inches by 9.
Yes, 9 inches by 9 inches. And that would be filled with dynamite. Your caps would be in a box of 12 to 15. And they were in this box about two inches by 1.5 inches. 2 inches by about 1.5 inches by 1.5 inches. And they were in sawdust, was the caps. So they wouldn't get damp, the caps themselves. As you got this fuse, there was two lots of fuses. There was the white one and the brown one. But it made no difference, so long as you tallied that, if it was where water was, and tallied it, it wouldn't affect it. Your life would still be a light if it went under water.
Right.
Well, going down the pit, again, to what they call the Farberus, that's the place as he was working, you used to have a little table affair for your caps, fuses and everything else, which was put on in a huge, in a box, in a dynamite box, shut. You had to be very careful at this. If he was only a learner, he had to be learned how to set a fuse in, or the cap to end the fuse. He sent the fuse would be a matter of about a yard in length, but they all had to be the same length. And of course, you had to cut as straight as you could across the fuses, so as when you cleaned your detonator, you put the fuse in. You nicked it up near the top of the fuse, and of course, there would be somewhere around about, say, 4 or 5, even to 6 holes, which would be a maximum of about 2 foot 6 drilled in. Now, this didn't occur every day. It was only when it was you come up against the solid ore itself, or against a bit of rock that was in the road. When this dynamite, before the dynamite entered the hole, they were so far apart with these holes, 8 by 7, and it'd be semi one. You'd have 3 at the top, 2 in the centre, and probably 3 at the bottom. You cut the end of the fuses as if you was pruning a twig. So as you, after you undone it, you showed the powder inside the fuse. But before that, you had what they call a stemming stick. And you would stem the ore, which was made by wood, this, was more like a dowel. It was cut on like an hexagon shape. And of course it was about 4 foot 6 in length, so as you could stem the hole. Now you had to have a certain amount of clay with you, soft clay. And then you made little pellets, what they call pellets. You roll them round and you put them end of the stick and you round them home. What they call rounding them home was to the end of the hole. Then you would place a half a dynamite with your cap inside. You would put one stick of dynamite up against this clay. Then you'd put this one half of dynamite plus your cap and your fuse in there, and you used to stem it with this stick. or this stick stopped it from firing or anything like that, you know what I mean? Then they used to put another half dynamite to it. And then, of course, they put the clay again, which was rolling around your fingers, just as like a sausage. And you put that on the end of your ramming stick and you rammed it on, seeing it was proper, it would end up as airtight.
Yeah.
Now, you did all the three, then you did the full length, so there were six shots in there. And after you trimmed them, or pruned them, to show your fuse, you always carried two candles. One was one side, the other hand, the other was in your hand. You would touch this powder, or to set the fuse going, and why you had to have two candles was, it'd be like a snake. It would spit out, and it would blow your candle out. So that was the reason why you had to have two candles burning. So he went along from the top, across, and across. Now it would give you time to get back to one of the gimbals, or the openings, of what you'd made further back the road. This gave you time to get back that far. Now, at the end of the shift, you were back onto the road, and you could hear these blasts. Now, which one ever didn't go off, you could tell by the way they could set them going. You see, they would go off probably every second after one another. You're lighting that. Then come into light that,
yeah.
You have that much time.
Because the fuses were all the same.
That's right, they were all the same length, but they had to be all the same length. So as when you didn't hear that report, it had to be reported to the foreman before you ever went back into that drive again, and you told him which one it was. And of course, if it was able to be got out, you got it out. You see, it'd be easier to pull, like, you know, with the ground being soft. Well, dynamite always strikes down. As you'll see, like, same as in these quarries or everything else, when they've lost them and they put the oil in the top, it seems to lift the bottom up first and throws it out. And that was just the same in this. So of course, like, as I said before, on these bogies, as used to weigh up at four bogies a ton, there was like kind of wages, which was different companies would get different prices. I know this myself, that number threes was about 7 and 6 a ton. Number tens was about 9 and 6 a ton.
Why was it a difference?
Well, because it was further away.
Wow.
Now then, I was one of the highest where I was, as the pit continues in 1940 over to Stenton or Longlands, I was getting 13 and 19 a ton, but I could only bogey 12 bogeys a shift. You see, if you was working it out, like same as on hours or anything like that, you were really praying for time to go back so as you could get your mount out. Because if there was ever any mishaps, we'll say in the pit, or a down, you know, like giving him in the pit, as I showed you on there, round the Weasley giving once when we were bogeying. And of course, they couldn't get past, they were fastened up, The only thing that they could do was to go the other way around by number threes, but it was a long way to push it, and it was hard to work. Mm. So if they went on, they'd have probably landing in day work. Probably about same as 8 or 9 shillings a day.
Were there any serious accidents down there?
There was one, but it was before ever I got down the cliff, and there was an opening. There was an opening somewhere about here, and there was a chap that lived down back lane. What was his name? And Mr. Fallon, I think they call him, and he got shot. He was killed. I saw also my mate, which we call the Ainsworth. Well, probably can say it now, but I think he must have had short fuses. And he hadn't time to get back before they exploded, and they hit him in the back. And his back was just like as if he'd, like a riddle, as if he'd been shot, like a shotgun had been fired at him. All blue he was. He never really got over that. And of course, next time he, what they call robbing, is going up above the drift when you're rubbing back, fetching the stuff through, like what bit of oil there is above.
Yes.
And he had 3 fingers knocked off. By the metal, like the still on him, you see. But there wasn't really a great man, but there was another man called Hodgkinson. He was at number threes, he got crushed. And of course, like, he came to be the change housekeeper in the end. And then I heard of a person down at Yarlside. I think the manager was called Mr. Kneebone, that worked there. And this chap was buried for 3 days.
Was this Smile at the Park?
No, this was at Yarlside.
Yeah, Smile at the Park worked at Yarlside, and he was buried
for... Well, it might have been him.
I thought it was a week.
No, it could have been a week, Mr. Walton. I thought it was three or four days, because it probably took him the week to get him out. Like, eventually he did get him out. Well, he was on something what they call a plank or a spire above the water. And of course, all he had was all he chewed was the bark of the tree. And of course, there was plenty of water, it was running water. Which he caught in his, like, billy can or something like that, that he drank.
Yeah.
Well, if that would keep him, it's very sour taste, his bark of a tree, the inside of the bark. Well, if you peel it, you can chew it.
Right.
It gives you a moisture in your mouth. You're not always dry. And it just gives you that effect. Well, when he landed out, I was told they blindfolded him. And of course, he was going to go in for compensation. And the manager turned around and said, he's sick enough to dig you out.
Mm.
And that's the answer he got. Same as one answer that was given to the lad still living today, Weirin. And he'd gone up to see if he could get a better place, like, you know, in the pit. Every place wasn't making money. As you come up to this rock and things like that, but you had to make so many, as I say, tons per week to make the wage that you were getting. Otherwise, you were putting on what they call day pay. But you were just working mostly as hard on day pay as what you was making money. You'd all this rock to fire or anything like that, but it all had to be shifted. You shifted in different ginnels and things like that, where you could put it into. But there was many times it had to be put into the hoppers and sent out of the pit. itself. Well, you've got to run it all that way. So they were doing as much work as anyone else, but still they didn't get paid for that.
Yeah.
They only got paid for the metal.
Yeah.
And this chap had gone over to the office this particular time and asked for a rise in, like, on a better place so as he could make money. Well, he was passed off and never said anything, and then a few weeks later, I said, behind him, this is why I can tell you. And he said, oh no, he said, why? I said, what do you want it for? That is satisfied. He said, well, he said, it isn't because I'm not satisfied, it's I'm satisfied with working well. I said, what is it then? Well, he said, I've three children. Well, he said, you had the pleasure. What would they say to me? They could get away with murder, these managers and bosses and things like that. It's always to plead underneath them. And then there's a fellow here, they call him Greaves, or Graves, used to live next door to me in Alderson Road. And I often asked him, why was it named Sticky Pinks? I said, on the board was Newton Mines, Woodbine Pit. So he said, well, he said, it's a funny thing, he said, about that, but he said, the only way he said I can tell it to you was one either the manager or the dialer, whoever he was, or one of the big knobs that had come to see the pit, was in his pit closed, and somebody has acknowledged the day by turning around saying, it's a pleasant day, so and so, and all this sort of thing. Oh, I said, yes, and then the pink. Well, his name as was like as Richard. Well, the nickname would be Dick, wouldn't it?
Mm.
So, of course, that's how it was originated by calling it Dickie Finks.
Oh, I never knew that. I bet not many other people
do that. No. He was supposed to go up and get a bath. And of course he must have turned round and said, oh, the subject must have made a funny. And that's the reason why. I said, he said, I am pink, isn't that? So that's how it was originated, they call him Dickie Pinks.
Yeah.
The firm really belonged to a Scottish firm, McGregor, I think was the name.
Oh.
And a bit.
I suppose when he went down a bit, yeah. In the beginning of your shift, that was it until the end of your shift.
That's right.
So you had to take your food down with you.
Well, you took your food down, you could only go, you either got the hot water sent down at, we'll say, 11:30, or 11:40, which you put the man, one of the truckers that was down there, that was putting they took it off. It could be me, it could be any of us. We put all the billy candles in there to warm up for 12 o'clock. You'd probably be coming down for your last, with your last boat, well, with your last bogey for the dinner tower.
Mm.
And you only got half an hour. Well, you worked like same as a shift work of 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
So on a Saturday, you would be working 5 hours.
Yeah.
So that's, 45 hours you'll be working.
Yes.
Per week.
It's a long week, isn't it?
Oh, it is a long week. I mean, you see, I was 21 when I was only picking 22 and 6.
Mm.
And these men that was down that pit, as I said, they maybe 7 and 6 or 8 and 6 per ton, they were only ranging about, say, 3, 4 and 5 pound up per week. But it's only meant it all depended on how many workmen was there. Like maybe 3 or maybe 4.
Yeah.
But no matter how many people was there, they still had to bogey, like as 40, whatever bogeys it was, as 4 bogeys to a ton. So they had to make money.
Mm.
It was very hard. And they called it the surface oil, the furnace area. Yeah?
Surface oil.
That's what they call it, surface oil. Whereas I could have shown you on this map, they're all different. There's one there numbered off from 1 to 20 something, in which it's giving the heights where they come up, like same as, well, 8 foot to top of Earth. Same as that one there, it's not on, but they open a pit here, a shaft. And then, of course, this road here, this was the road that I run along this road, underneath Stenton Road, right through to Staten, or Longlands. Well, on one of these, there's Longlands there, there was pits there, which was opened as a pit.
Was it? Longlands?
At Longlands. There was a change house there.
Behind the cottages?
Yes. There was a change house, engine house, you could say, and things like that. It's all one of these.
I think this tip's just about to come to its end now. It's been very interesting. I'm glad you told me, I'm glad you went into detail about that business of firing the shots.
Yeah.
Because I bet you